Hello and welcome to this week's Key Voices. I'm Caroline Doherty. We will no longer be including the week's headlines in our podcast, but can I encourage you to visit resources.thekeysupport.com/newsbriefing and sign up for our news briefing, a weekly education sector roundup delivered to your inbox every Friday. Today, I am joined by my colleague, Ruth Gaffson, content editor and former head teacher, and Karen Westpiecer, director of operations at the Driver Youth Trust and founder of UK Ed Res Chat. And we're going to be talking in a little bit more detail about SEND and some of the issues and challenges that schools are facing. So welcome to both of you. So Karen, just quickly, for those listening who aren't familiar with the work of the Driver Youth Trust, can you tell me a little bit more about it?
Mm-hmm. So the Driver Youth Trust is a charity that works at the intersect between SEND and literacy. We work in schools to help support inclusive literacy, and we lobby government and conduct research in order to try and make this higher up the agenda.
Great stuff. So my first question is to both of you. What do you think are the biggest challenges that school leaders are currently facing when it comes to supporting all pupils?
Well, I'll take the quick win of funding first, but I'll skim past it a little bit because I want to have a sneaky second answer as well. But in terms of funding and coming from the Driver Youth Trust perspective in particular, I'd just like to put a shout out for the funding for the non-high needs block. The high needs block is essential and must be funded adequately. But what we're seeing coming through in some schools that we work with is that the high needs block is allocated, and that doesn't leave anything for the conditions with lower levels of need. So we work around literacy difficulties, around dyslexia. And so actually access to, for example, dyslexia support specialists is really low because they're one of the first things to get cut because it's kind of seen as one of the easier things that schools face compared to the high needs. So it's not to write off high needs, but just to say there's a whole spectrum of need there. The other one I was going to mention, though, which is perhaps a little bit different, and I'd be really keen to hear everyone else's take on this, is around the knowledge and understanding of staff. So when the code of practice came in, this put the emphasis on every teacher being a teacher of SEND. But what we know from initial teacher training is that there's not actually enough space in the initial teacher training framework in the year or so that people have are doing their qualification and learning to actually get under the skin of what SEND is and how teachers should work with it. And we know from DfE statistics, when these newly qualified teachers are coming into the classroom, they are feeling least confident when it comes to teaching pupils with SEN and assessing pupils with SEN. EAL gets a shout out in that bottom group as well. But that's probably, in kind of pedagogical terms, a similar type of issue. How do you adapt your teaching to work with these different types of pupils? And this isn't just about new teachers. Established teachers also say that they don't have adequate CPD around SEN. So it's about the knowledge and the skills of the workforce, I think, would be something that we need to look at in more detail.
Yeah, I'm sure you would agree with that, Ruth. What are your
same
thoughts?
List as me. I wanted to add one further, which is knowing where to get help from, because I think that's really important as well, is that sometimes you can identify a child has a specific need, but you don't know where to go next. So I think that's key to supporting pupils and the challenges that are in schools.
Great. And I'm sure we'll come back to some of the challenges as we go through and discuss some other things. I'd be interested, Karen, in your take on how can you tell if a school is inclusive? We're hearing a lot about off-rolling and these kinds of things lately in the news. What would you say there?
I think it's really hard. I don't really have an answer for how you can tell whether it's inclusive. I think probably going there and experiencing it is the only way. I can't see anything that you could pull out from statistics or data that would identify that. And that's been a bit problematic. So over the latter part of the summer, there were some reports coming through in the press, the mainstream press, more than the education press, that was suggesting, and I don't know whether it's right or wrong, but they were suggesting, based on that pupil level data that's collected in the annual census, that schools are less inclusive because that you're seeing fewer SEN children on roll and you're seeing more in other types of schools, such as specialist schools. But there's a number of things that underlie that data that I think is really quite problematic. So first, as I mentioned earlier, the code of practice that came in 2015, that just skews any data when you're looking at SEND over that time period. So if you're looking back over the last 10 years, you have that slap bang in the middle and definitions of SEND and how it was dealt with changed.
Yeah.
So that's problematic. You have a change in the number of pupils in the system anyway.
Yeah.
Primary head teachers will have witnessed it. Secondary head teachers.
It's coming.
You're getting it now. So that has a problem when some of these newspapers are looking at absolute numbers rather than as proportions. You have fundamental differences when you dig into primary and secondary further in terms of what the average number of SEN pupils is. So overall nationally it's 14.9, but that figure, as you might expect, is higher in primary and lower in secondary. And the conditions that you're working with are different in those ages as well. SEN isn't this static lump that can really just be seen in the data. It gives you a headline. It doesn't give you a depth of understanding. And the final point is that you could have a school that takes a large number of SEND pupils, but if those pupils are only having their education in a special base or in a special unit within that school and not having the same teachers, the same play times, using the same lunchroom, then is it really the same school? It's kind of a school within a school, and that might mean that if you're taking the black and white picture in the data, that they have loads of SEN kids, therefore they're inclusive. That might just not actually be what's true on the ground. So to come back to my first point, I think you have to go to the school to see if they're inclusive.
Yeah, and have you got any thoughts you'd like to share on that?
I was thinking more about the practical level of within a school, how can you tell whether the school is inclusive? And I was really thinking about the data that you can get from surveys and surveying pupils and parents about SEN provision is a really good way of finding out that kind of information and using that data to analyse the school. And I think staff and parents working in partnership is key to a fully inclusive school. So I think that's really, really important. And the other factor was the early intervention systems that are in place to pick up difficulties or challenges right at the basic stages where you can really intervene and support people before it gets to a stage where the gap is much, much wider so that they can still be included within all the learning as well.
Absolutely. So what you're doing as a result of the need being identified, because that's another interesting thing that you do occasionally see in schools that are not doing so well, that are struggling, that there can be more SEN pupils because they're over-labelling, over-assessing, maybe not going back to one of your original points, maybe not getting that specialist support when they're coming to assessments. To have to be put into one of the SEND categories within the annual census, you don't necessarily need to have a specialist assessment. It's based largely on teacher judgment, on SENCO judgment. So if you're a school in difficult circumstances, sometimes it can be that you look like you've got a lot of SEN pupils, but actually if you had a really good base of quality first teaching, you might not have quite that number of pupils after all.
And do you think that there's a kind of contradiction or tension around the fact that, you know, schools and school leaders are held to account on performance data? And therefore, if they have a large number of pupils with SEND that they may be doing a great job by, then that still might not be reflected in their overall performance data. So that there's that, you know, and that's where some of this suggestions about pupils being asked and to move on in whatever circumstances. Is that where that comes from, do you think?
So Ofsted are changing their approach around this a lot more, and they don't want to see schools that are just going after it for the data. And I think they'll be looking more closely at SEN provision in schools and making sure that schools are inclusive as much as they can. The markers in the new framework look quite positive, but I think we're all waiting to actually see what that looks like on the ground in practice.
And hopefully more of an emphasis on progress rather than an attainment. That's, as you say, we'll have to wait and see on some of that. So just wanted to talk a little bit about, you mentioned quality first teaching there. Do you think that new teachers get taught enough about how to support pupils with SEND?
No. I did some analysis of this back earlier this year in a kind of geeky data way.
Don't apologise, Karen. You love data.
I do. I spent the weekend reading all the Ofsted ITT reports.
Like you do.
You do. Yeah, that's what I do for fun at the weekends. And I found that a significant proportion weren't mentioning SEND at all. That's not to say that those providers aren't doing what they need to do around SEND. But there is the old adage of what gets measured gets done. And if Ofsted aren't holding the ITT providers to account, then who is? And I think feeding on from that, after leaving your initial teacher training, the new early careers framework also doesn't have a strong enough focus around SEN. Yeah. So from the current look of the early career framework, it puts a lot of pressure on SENCOs. But what we know about SENCOs, so there was a survey conducted from the University of Bath last year that found that SENCOs don't have enough time, according to the SENCOs that were surveyed, don't have enough time to adequately support pupils. So if they don't have enough time to support that obviously most important group in the school, where are they going to find the time to support all the colleagues and to do all of that development of the early career teachers that's really being pushed towards them through the early career framework? I just think there needs to be greater expertise, but greater time for that expertise to develop in schools.
And also recognising that, in a lot of schools, the person who takes on that SENCO role may have some other really significant responsibilities to fill. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Ruth? Do you feel that you got enough training?
So I think that there's a big difference between training teachers about SEN and teaching a pupil with SEN. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you can train teachers about all kinds of difficulties and needs, but until you have a child in your class with one, you actually don't know very much at all. And compounded with the fact that the second time you get a child with a very similar need, they're completely different. So for me, it's about offering support and knowledge to all teachers, not just new teachers, about all the needs of the pupils in your school and the actual context that you have. I think that's the key, so that new teachers can actually continue to learn whilst they're teaching. And also, I think that when teaching pupils with SEND, you need to start from a blank sheet every time, because not every child is the same.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, yeah, I think we've established there that it is very difficult to teach teachers about SEND until they encounter it. But also, as you say, Karen, there's really very little time. To what extent that can fit into the role of the SENCO to ensure the sort of staff development there, it isn't clear, really, is it? Whose responsibility that is? Have we got any ideas or solutions or suggestions?
Practical solutions that I've seen in schools which have been really successful is where teaching assistants have had experience of working with people with a specific need, whether it be autism or speech and language need or whatever it might be. And they have spent time working with and learning with local schools that have a specialist unit. Okay. So they upskill themselves, and although they're not the qualified teacher, they actually have the skill of the need of that pupil. So when other pupils are in the school with identified needs that are similar, there's someone to go to that isn't the Senko. And that's quite a clever route round. It also upskills members of staff into specialist areas.
It's an interesting thought about leveraging knowledge across groups of school, especially smaller schools where they might not have encountered pupils with that particular need for a while.
My one is slightly more radical, and it's around taking some of the burden off around filling in EHCPs and some of that external liaison that the Senkos spend a considerable portion of their time doing. And if you look to what special schools do, the people who are filling in the EHCPs are often much more from administrative backgrounds, so that you have your specialism in the classroom where it's needed. So the idea that you have your most qualified person spending a vast majority of their time filling in forms, it doesn't quite add up. So take that away, use someone else in your administrative team. Obviously get the Senko to check it because they know the children best. But they shouldn't have to be leading on that all the time, perhaps.
Yeah.
And related to your point about groups of schools, one of the challenges that is reported to me is that when you have mats that are working across multiple local authorities, each of the forms for an EHCP in your different local authority is different. So that's just adding a massive burden that you have to fill out a different form for a different local authority. Why can't the government
fix
that?
And the thresholds are different too.
Yeah.
So it's not just the forms, it's the thresholds too. So whereas one child might get an EHCP in one local authority, working in another one with exactly the same form, they wouldn't get it.
And that could be just over the border. It could be another school within your MAT or within your federation. So that seems, that's not something that school leaders can fix. It could be a quick fix from government, though.
Yeah, well, let's hope they're listening. we've talked a little bit about school leaders and Senkos, but what do you think governors can do, to hold their schools to account and understand this issue better?
So last year, DYT worked with Whole School Send to produce the Send Governance Review Guide, which I think is a really useful resource to do a kind of audit of where you're currently at and give some ideas for some of the strategic questions that you could ask related to the different areas of governance that governors are responsible for. I think beyond that, don't be afraid to ask questions as a governor. Because in many schools, the pupils with SEND will be in a minority, and because, as you're saying, they all have different conditions and all have different profiles, different barriers to their learning.
Yeah.
It can feel challenging as a governor to ask those detailed questions because you worry that you're not being strategic anymore. And that's the mantra of governors. But I think when it comes to SEN, you can blur those boundaries. You do have to, in some ways, blur those boundaries to really understand about the provision that's going on.
Yeah, and something that I've always found useful as a governor in a school that has sort of specialism around SEND is go meet the children and kind of I won't lay claim to being the most strategic of people, but go and actually meet the children and understand a bit more about their barriers for learning. If it's something that's not you've not experienced or you don't know about, I think it's important for somebody to be an advocate and hold the school to account and understand it more deeply, because at the end of the day, they're not just data. You can't really contextualise information you're given unless you get something of a feel for the experience of a pupil in your school with SEND, really. But as I say, don't quote me. I never claim to be an expert on governance. What do you think, Ruth?
I think that governors can really support schools within the funding area, and it's protecting the funding that is kept aside for pupils with SEN. Mm. And it comes back to your point about those pupils that sit just above that.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you support the pupils who aren't identified as SEN just yet?
Yeah.
You know, because there's no funding for those pupils.
Yeah.
So on a strategic level, governors can look at funding, look at the allocation of resources. Yes, the majority of funding is spent on staffing, we know that.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a proportion of funding that is spent on other resources. So I think that's really important. And also to hold the school to account for their improvement objectives.
Mm-hmm.
The school are on a journey. As a governor, you're supporting that school and taking them on that journey. So I think it's really important to know what the objectives are and to sit and listen to how that's progressing.
Any questions that you would suggest governors start asking if they're thinking about how to raise this?
My go-to question as an inclusion governor is always about the interventions. So we get told year three aren't working so well in literacy, so we've got a special group and it's got this many kids with special educational needs in it. And I want to know how they're monitoring that group, how long those kids have been in it. Because if they've been in it for much more than half a term, then that's not an intervention group. That is just their lesson, and they're missing another lesson or another part of school life because of that. So it's always about the interventions, what data's being recorded, how long the intervention's lasting.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, trying to understand the impact of them, and as we're saying, the new framework coming in, less of a focus on interventions and trying to get ahead of that problem before children are being taken out of other lessons and so it goes round. But obviously it's different in different schools. Great stuff. Well, thank you very much for your thoughts on that. And thank you very much for listening. Key Voices is produced by The Key, giving education leaders the knowledge to act. Members of The Key for School Leaders can access hundreds of articles on the latest issues in education at thekeysupport.com.